I worked as a volunteer for search and rescue in my area. I lived near a popular hiking area on the east side of the Rocky Mountains, so we would often get out-of-state hikers who were woefully unprepared for mountain weather and terrain. Normally, we would be able to find the person and get them home safe, but we have some pretty dangerous wildlife out here, and while they don't often go after humans, they'll make quick work of a body if something were to happen to you out there. If you fell down a rocky hill and broke your leg, a bear might see you as an easy meal, and in a couple of days, there'd be nothing left. No trace whatsoever. If someone goes missing out here and we can't find them, it's probably because the wildlife found them first. Or at least that's what I've always been told. I'm not sure what to believe anymore. My revelation comes from a season where we had three hikers all go missing, without a trace around the same area. They were individual cases, no connection between them, and they happened several weeks apart. I was part of the horseback search team. They liked to have us on horseback because we could cover more ground and traverse rough terrain a lot easier than we could on foot. A lot of us riders in the area end up doing this on a volunteer basis, just as something to do. But that's not really important to the story. I got really familiar with the area after doing three extensive searches that season. All of the missing hikers were reported as likely wildlife fatalities. There was a large cave system nearby, and the police were convinced we were dealing with a predatory bear that lived in the area, though they were unable to find it. I wasn't convinced. I was pretty good friends with one of the lead officers from Fish and Wildlife. He told me that bears don't typically live in caves. In fact, no large predators do. Sometimes they'll take up temporary residence in a cave, but even when searching for hibernation spots, bears tend to burrow in a side hill. He didn't think we were dealing with a bear. Something might live in those caves, he said, but it isn't a bear. We organized the team to do one last search around the caves before officially calling it off. I remember it well. There was no sign of the missing hiker, or any of the missing hikers for that matter. But we did the search anyway. We organized in grids so we wouldn't be overlapping. My section of the grid was the one nearest to the caves, but I wasn't concerned. I was on horseback and I was carrying a sidearm in the event I ran into any combative wildlife. My horse never much liked that area, but we had been over there so many times that year, I thought she was finally getting used to it. She was on edge that night. She wasn't outwardly nervous, but I could tell she thought something there wasn't right. In hindsight, I should have listened to her. It was around dusk when we were on our way out that I heard something in one of the caves as we passed by. It sounded like someone threw a rock down the cave, but I didn't see anything. I asked, "Who's there?" but received no response. A moment later, in the darkness of the cave, I saw two eyes emerge. My first thought was bear, or mountain lion, so I grabbed my gun and pointed it at the mouth of the cave. I told whatever it was to stay in there, not expecting it could understand me, but oftentimes if wild animals hear humans, they'll steer clear. But if this really was the rogue predatory bear that was killing these hikers, I was likely in trouble. My horse was fidgety and nervous now, and I couldn't blame her. I could tell she wanted to bolt and run, but I didn't want the creature in the cave to chase us if it didn't already have a mind to. It blinked at us in the darkness and slowly emerged from its rocky home. What I saw at the mouth of the cave left me speechless. I expected to see some kind of animal. Something covered in fur, but this was far from that. It looked like a little human, almost ghoul-like. It was bald and pale as the moonlight shining above. Its limbs were spindly and appeared too long for its body. Its legs had strange angles to them, almost as if they were a morph of human legs and those of a dog. The creature moved awkwardly, but I imagine if it wanted to run, it could move pretty damn fast with those hind legs. Its face was the worst part. I mean, seriously, I can't even properly describe it to you. It was like looking at a skull. Imagine it, its nose was just two slits on its face. And those eyes, oh man, those dark eyes took up just about its entire head. The way it stared at me sent chills down my spine. It looked like some sort of demon, something out of a horror film. It hissed at me when it saw me, and I am not ashamed to admit I was scared out of my wits. Without thinking, I took a shot at it, but who knows if it hit. I mean, the creature retreated into the cave so quickly I couldn't tell if the shot landed or not. There was no way I was sticking around to see if it was going to come back out. I was out of there like a bat out of hell. Once I got back to my truck, my hands were still shaking, and I called up my friend from Fish and Wildlife. I told him straight up that I saw something in the cave a moment ago, and that it wasn't a bear. I expected him to laugh or make some joke, but he was pretty cryptic in his response. He told me about the unsolved missing person cases near large cave systems, and how there's all this speculation about what the correlation is, if there even is one. The way he talked about it was chilling, I tell you. He mentioned that the police didn't know about it, but most park rangers did. He even said that half the time they are sent out to dispatch a dangerous bear, it turns out to be something else entirely. Something that isn't a bear at all. I could tell he was serious, and he told me to go home, assuring me that he'll take care of it. And that was that. It was like an unspoken agreement between us to never talk about it again. But I'll admit, it's something that's haunted me ever since. Every time I drive by that area or hear about another missing person, I can't help but think about that creature and what it might really be. It's one of those things, you know? The more you think about it, the more it gets to you. It's left me with more questions than answers. What was that thing? Why did my friend from Fish and Wildlife seem to know about it? And why don't they tell the police? But I guess some things are just better left unknown. All I know is I'll never look at caves or wild animals the same way again. I still have dreams about those dark, soulless eyes staring at me from the shadows of that cave. It's an experience I wouldn't wish on anyone, and something I'll never forget. No way, no how. I don't know if this counts as a cryptid encounter or not, but it was definitely something far beyond the normal scope of modern zoology. That's for sure. I was on a kayaking trip in eastern Virginia. My route was about 30 miles, but that didn't take as long as you'd think with how fast the water was moving. It was only a 2-day, 1-night trip. I parked my car at the end point of my route and had a friend drop me off upriver that morning. I'm pretty experienced with a kayak, but that was my first solo trip. And after what I ran into out there, it landlocked me for about 5 years. I wouldn't even go into a swimming pool. The area I was kayaking was fairly remote. It wasn't dangerous country by any means, but it wasn't easily accessible, even by foot. The forests around that area are thick, and the underbrush makes it difficult to hike unless you are on groomed trails, which there weren't many of. Funnily enough, the landscape would seem a prime location for a Bigfoot sighting. But that isn't the creature I saw. Most of my trip was going according to plan. I did get hung up on a fallen tree and took on some water before I was able to free my boat. But things like that happen, and I just dumped the water out when I stopped for lunch and went on my way. I was on the water a little longer the first day than I had planned. I made good time, but it was around sunset before I stopped to make camp. I remember seeing something moving under the water as I beached my boat and drug it up onto shore. It didn't make a splash, and I couldn't get a good view of what it was before it headed for the safety of deeper water. I knew for sure it wasn't a fish. We have a type of large aquatic salamander called a hellbender that is native to the area. They can get pretty big, about 5 pounds, but sightings are rare. If you are lucky enough to see one in the wild, it is a sign the river is doing well. They typically hang out in shallow water and hide around large rocks. They pose no threat to humans. I didn't think too much about the creature and started setting up camp for the night and started my dinner. It was nearly dark by that point, but the moon was full and reflected off the river, casting a faint blue glow across the landscape. There was a slight breeze that night, and the only sound across the entire valley was the wind in the leaves. That was one of the reasons I love spending my time in the outdoors. It was so nice to get away and enjoy the silence. I had done a lot of camping up to that point. I always stored my food away from camp and washed up before settling in for the night, making sure not to draw the attention of hungry wildlife. I'll admit, bears do make me nervous, but I never had any problems with them before. I stored my food in a dry sack and hung it in a tree about 100 yards away from my tent. I could see the tree from camp, but just barely. I watched the sun set below the water and I thought I saw something moving along the surface. At first, I thought it must be a waterlogged branch or tree that had fallen into the water. It was getting dark, so I couldn't see it well. I stared at it, trying to focus my eyes. Suddenly, it moved again. It was like a giant snake, or if I didn't know better, I'd say it was a sea serpent. I thought my eyes were playing tricks on me. They had to be. There were no sea serpents in the rivers of Virginia. I had a long day on the river, so with that thought, I got ready for bed. I drifted off to sleep without another thought of what was in the river, but the mystery would soon come knocking at my door. I was awoken in the night to the sound of something sniffing at my tent. I could hear the creature moving on the grass outside, but I couldn't hear footfalls. I thought the worst. I thought it was a bear. I stayed still and silent and prayed for the animal to move on. I didn't have any food in the tent, nothing at all that smelled, not even a chapstick. The creature stayed at my camp for about 10 minutes before it decided there was nothing worth its time. I heard it bump into my kayak as it left. I stayed still in my tent for another 15 minutes before venturing out with a flashlight. There was no sign of the creature when I emerged. I searched the ground for footprints, but I couldn't make out anything discernible. I breathed a sigh of relief when I realized I was alone, but then I looked to the tree with my food hang. There was something wrapped around the base of the tree, and it looked like it was starting to climb. It looked like a giant snake from that distance. I was dumbfounded. We have snakes native to the area, but nothing like that. I left my camp to try to get a view of the creature. I had to know what it was. It seemed preoccupied with reaching my food bag, so I figured I was safe as long as I didn't get too close. I kept my distance out of cowardice, but I moved in close enough to see that it wasn't a snake that was climbing the tree. It was a salamander. It looked like a hellbender, but about 10 times the size. It must have been 12, maybe 15 feet long, and the middle of the creature was more akin to that of a snake than of a salamander. It was literally as if a sea serpent had grown legs and could walk on land. That's the only way I can describe it. I know it seems impossible, but I know what I saw. Unfortunately for me, the creature managed to reach my food and have itself an easy meal that night. I watched the entire thing happen, but I dared not confront the animal. It ate until it was satisfied, and then waddled down the embankment and disappeared beneath the water's surface. I can tell you one thing for certain, and it's that I was not at all thrilled about putting my boat back in the river that morning. The entire way back to my car, I was searching for signs of that thing. Luckily, I didn't see it again. My brain tells me that it must have been an unnaturally large hellbender. It's not unheard of for fish, salamanders, and turtles to grow to absurd sizes when food is plentiful and their habitat allows it. But then, how do I explain the creature's elongated body? Is this just something that happens when they grow to such a size? Or did I meet something else out there on the river? I believe in hypnosis. This day and age, you have to, don't you think? White line fever kind of made it a thing. It's irrefutable. You know what that is, right? It's that sensation you get after driving for a while, arriving at your destination, only to wonder how exactly you got there. That's a form of hypnosis. Your mind drifts away while your body stays in place, going through the motions with every measure of practice safety. Your body shifts into autopilot. In those instances, you lose maybe 10 minutes of your time. Maybe you've got a long commute and it's 40 minutes or even an hour. There's a limit, you know? Your brain kind of checks in. It pings back into your body to make sure muscle memory hasn't steered you off a cliff or something. In cases like this, it's easy to forgive the 10 minutes of time that you don't remember experiencing. However, I've forgotten more than 10 minutes. I've forgotten 3 days. Maybe in the span of an entire life, 3 days doesn't sound like a lot, but it sure is for me. It was not a bender, and it was not some accident. 3 days were stolen from me. I remember driving east on I-90, crossing South Dakota. I was on the way home after spending the holiday in Montana. I was only midway through the drive. I wasn't tired yet, but I was alone on the road. My eyes were playing tricks on me, like eyes do. Every pair of headlights cresting over the horizon felt like a big deal. When they were far away, and especially small, I found myself hoping that I was coming upon a city. I-90 isn't much to look at, and a city would have helped pass the time. But each time, it was always the light of some other vehicle coming towards me. We passed and then drifted apart in anonymity. That went on for about an hour. Then a trio of blinking lights crested on that horizon, all different colors, spaced too far apart to be the front end of a car, blinking, flashing, fading to black. I remember turning down the radio and shifting the lever that cleans my windshield. There was something wrong about those lights. They weren't just coming toward me. They were rising off the ground. They were climbing too high to be a trick of the road. Three lights, yellow, blue, and red. They brightened and dimmed. They started to spin, as if each was mounted on the edge of a giant frisbee. I remember under my breath and asking just what I'd found. I remember passing underneath the lights. I remember sticking my head out of the driver's side window to get a better look at the vessel above me. It was as long as two city buses stacked end to end. The strobe of the lights revealed a smooth black metal. There were no connected parts and no seams where the material was bound together. The shape was one solid piece. Another light came down, I think. I remember shielding my eyes from something. I remember slamming on the brakes. If it was another car on the road, there were never any reports. I remember feeling like I was falling. Then I woke up back home. I literally blinked and I was home. Not only home, but I was standing in my local grocery store with a gallon of milk in my hand. I dropped the carton and it ruptured. Milk sloshed over my shoes while I stood there in the aisle. But they weren't the shoes I was wearing in the car. It was daylight out. Not the next day, I soon learned, but 3 days later. But apparently, I'd arrived home on schedule, if my boss is to be believed. I showed up where I was supposed to when I was supposed to. I spoke to my friends and family. I told everyone all about Montana and described a peaceful drive home. I know it wasn't me speaking, not really. Otherwise, I would have mentioned the lights in the sky. I lived my life as normal for those 3 days, or at least my body did. Autopilot. Auto living. There's no point in doubting whether or not my body was here. Everyone says that it was, so who am I to argue? But that didn't make it right. I saw a doctor about it since I thought I was going crazy. There were no abnormalities in my brain or in my sleeping patterns. Everything psychological was right as rain. I have a new scar, though. I found it recently. It's a vertical line down the back of my neck, running parallel to my spine. I asked for an x-ray on it, and I've had surgery, I guess. There's also now a metal plate connecting two of my vertebrae. I've seen the scans with my own eyes. I can feel it when I press my fingers against my neck, but it's not supposed to be there. There's no record of that operation. I know there was no auto accident. My car wasn't wrecked and I wasn't hospitalized. If the surgery was performed over those 3 days, I wouldn't have healed already. Yet what other explanation is there? I saw the lights. I saw the craft. And then I arrived home. I arrived home early. And I lived 3 days of my life without ever realizing it. I find myself wondering what woke me up. What provoked my brain to check back in on reality in that specific moment? It was just a trip to the grocery store, as far as I could tell. Or were they simply done with me? Did they finish with the body first, and then spend some extra time on the mind? Did they like what they found? 3 days is a lot of time. It's a long time to spend without control. It's long enough that it's hard to imagine what my mind was doing while my bones were walking around these streets. Where was I? What was I doing? What was being done to me? I can't get the time back. I know that now. I just need someone to tell me if this is all over. I don't want to be afraid of the lights at the end of the road. Hey there, I'm Jake. At the time of this story, I was in my 20s and living in Central Florida. I always enjoyed exploring unknown places and searching for things that defied ordinary explanation. That led me to the Everglades in Florida, a place I had always wanted to visit because it is so steeped in mystery and folklore. The Everglades are famous for their sprawling wetlands, mysterious marshes, and dense mangrove forests. But among the locals, they're also known for something more sinister, a place where strange and unexplained occurrences have been reported for generations. I decided to head to there after hearing stories about an unidentified creature spotted in the area. Some people called it a mere alligator, but others swore that it was something more ominous, something otherworldly. Intrigued, I planned my trip during the fall, when the swamps are supposedly at their most eerie. When I first arrived, the feeling was instant. I couldn't shake the feeling that I had stepped into another world. The air was thick with humidity, clinging to my skin. Tall moss-covered trees loomed overhead, and the ever-present chorus of insects buzzed in my ears. I took my time getting to know the area. The wetlands stretched out before me, a maze of waterways and thick vegetation. I could see alligators lazily swimming in the murky waters, their eyes just above the surface, watching. Birds of every color took flight as I made my way deeper into the marshes, and the sound of unseen creatures rustled in the underbrush. I set up camp near a large clearing, where the trees gave way to a wide-open view of the sky. The first night passed uneventfully, but I couldn't shake my strange feeling. It was as if the swamp was alive. During the day, I explored the dense mangrove forests, getting lost more than once. I stumbled upon hidden pockets of beauty. I even found evidence of the native wildlife, tracks of raccoons and signs of other creatures that called the Everglades home. But mixed with the natural beauty was something unsettling. I would catch fleeting glimpses of movement out of the corner of my eye, shadows that didn't quite align with the wind's movement, sounds that didn't quite fit with the normal sounds of the swamp. By the end of the first day, my sense of adventure had been tinged with a feeling of unease. The Everglades were hiding something, and I could feel it in my bones. It all began around midnight. The moon was hidden behind a thick layer of clouds, and I was navigating through the wetlands with my flashlight. The only sound was the occasional splash of water or the distant hoot of an owl. I remember coming across a clearing, and that's when I saw it. At first, I thought my eyes were playing tricks on me. The darkness of the night and the shadowy terrain could mess with your mind after all. But standing there, just a few feet away, was something enormous and unmistakably real. Its face was like that of an alligator, yet twisted and unnatural, as if sculpted by some dark force. Those yellow, piercing eyes seemed to glow in the dim light, locking onto mine with an intelligence that was both alien and terrifying. They were not just the eyes of a predator. They held something deeper, a malicious cunning that seemed to stare into my very soul. The creature's body was an odd fusion of reptilian features. It was covered in coarse, uneven scales that glistened in the pale moonlight. Its limbs were thick and muscular, yet they seemed out of proportion, giving its movements a strange and awkward gait. Despite standing upright, it retained a hunched posture, as if it were not quite used to this form. Its long tail trailed behind, thrashing slowly as if it had a mind of its own. Its evil eyes never left mine as it seemed to consider me, sizing me up, evaluating whether I was prey or something more. I couldn't move. I couldn't breathe. I was trapped in those haunting, unblinking eyes, paralyzed by a mixture of fear and fascination. Its jaw opened slightly, revealing rows of sharp, predatory teeth. I could hear a low growl, a sound that resonated in my chest. The air around us seemed to grow colder. It shifted its weight, muscles rippling under the scales, and I could see the sheer power contained within its form. Despite its awkward appearance, there was no doubt that it could move with terrifying speed if it chose to. Every rational thought told me to run, to flee from this impossible being, but my feet were rooted to the spot. All I could do was stare back, locked in a silent duel. Part of me wanted to run, to flee from this entity that seemed to have stepped out of some nightmare. My instinct screamed at me to put as much distance between myself and the creature as possible. Yet another part of me was inexplicably captivated by its presence. It was a fascination that went beyond mere curiosity. It was a profound connection that I couldn't shake. Though it represented everything unknown and terrifying, there was something in its eyes that held me. I stood there, caught in a struggle between fear and fascination. The minutes felt like hours, each second stretching into eternity as we stared at each other, locked in a silent communion. I was drawn deeper into those haunting eyes, the rest of the world falling away until there was nothing but the creature and me. Then, almost as suddenly as it had appeared, the creature finally turned away. It began to move, lumbering into the darkness with its awkward, shambling gait. Its movements were slow at first, deliberate and measured, as if it were reluctant to break the connection. But gradually it picked up pace, its form growing fainter and fainter until it was swallowed by the swamp. As I finally began to move, the sounds of the swamp slowly returning to my ears, I realized that I had been given a glimpse into a world that few have ever seen. I returned to camp, but sleep was impossible. The following day, I went back and tried to find traces of the creature, but there was nothing. No footprints, no signs, no evidence. I left the Everglades with more questions than answers. The experience stayed with me, haunting me. People may dismiss my story, but I know what I saw. The Everglades hold secrets, and I had stumbled upon one of them. That creature, whatever it was, will always be etched in my memory, a chilling reminder to embrace the wonder and terror of our extraordinary world. For as long as I can remember, I've been tirelessly working for something. In high school, I wanted to get into a good university, so my grades and extracurriculars were top priority. Then it was all about working on my degree so I could get a good job. I put everything I had into my career. Not to brag, but it definitely paid off. I now enjoy a highly respected position in my field and a decent spread of achievements. But I was missing something. I couldn't tell you the last time I took some time for myself. I don't know if I've actually taken a real break in the last 2 decades. I decided to change that. I wanted to do something life-changing and completely unrelated to work. So I planned a solo road trip around the southwestern United States. I packed a suitcase, cashed in my PTO, and just started driving. It was the freest I've felt in years. I hit all the major cities, saw the sights, and experienced the beauty of nature along the way. I had planned out a path ahead of time, including where I would sleep each night. It was a mix of hotels, Airbnbs, and host families who let travelers like me stay in their houses. It was amazing, but there was one weird thing that I noticed. I mean, it didn't bother me at the time. Even now, it might be just a coincidence, but in light of what ended up happening, I can't help but read into it too much. When I was in the populated areas, cities, suburbs, cute little towns, everyone was, well, as you'd expect. Clerks, receptionists, everyone who dealt with people on a regular basis were friendly and polite. But in the more rural desert areas, the people started seeming, I'm not really sure what the right word is, a bit frigid maybe. They were abnormally curt and seemed like they wanted nothing more than for me to get out of there, away from them. They just all kept to themselves. I didn't feel welcomed at all. And again, maybe I'm just paranoid. But now I wonder if they had secrets they didn't want a stranger to find out. Anyway, I didn't let the lack of warmth take away from my trip. This trip wasn't about making friends. So as long as they got their money and I got my bed, I was content. About halfway through the trip, I was fully in the desert for a couple days. I had arranged to stay a night at an Airbnb. It was an adorable little house with a lot of solitude. The nearest town was a couple miles away. This was my first Airbnb on the trip. I had spent all previous nights at least around other people, either the hosts whose houses I crashed at, or the staff and fellow guests at the hotels. This would be my first solo night. I was honestly very excited. I'd have a nice house all to myself with no traffic noises or city lights, just the stars and the desert and me. When I got there, I settled right in. I watched the sun go down and the stars come out. Without the light pollution of the city, the view was incredible. It got chilly at night, so I made myself some hot chocolate and curled up with a blanket and a movie. Soon I fell asleep. Everything was great. Then something strange happened. I woke up quite suddenly in the middle of the night, and no matter what I did, I could not get back to sleep. I tried everything I could think of. I think that somehow my body must have sensed that something was amiss. I know this will sound cliche, but the air honestly felt, I don't know. I believe charged is the word. I just know everything felt sort of tense. like a scene in a movie when you know something is about to happen. At the time, I just assumed I was just nervous about the trip, especially since this whole Airbnb thing was a first. I decided some fresh air would be good to clear my head. I remember looking up at the stars and being floored all over again. I know it shouldn't be possible, but I'm certain they were even brighter and more beautiful than before. Almost unnaturally so. I was only outside for a couple minutes before I saw a shooting star. I was thrilled. I had never seen one before in person, only in movies. But then I saw another. And just when I was thinking about how lucky that was, I saw a third shooting star. Then a fourth, fifth, sixth. Unbelievable. I couldn't believe my eyes or my luck. I was over the moon. But the shooting stars didn't stop. They just kept coming and coming. And then things got even stranger. Instead of going straight down into the horizon like normal, the stars started looping around. Soon the sky was filled with them. They just come out of the darkness, fall down, then fly back around, away from the Earth. At this point, I realized those were not stars. I didn't know what they were, but even a city slicker like me knew that shooting stars don't do that. Okay, I know this part will sound insane, but please know that I'm not crazy. I'm sure I wouldn't believe it if I hadn't seen it myself, but, well, I did see it. The stars, well, the lights, kept looping around the sky. They came in tighter and tighter until they had formed a giant glowing circle, spinning in the sky. The circle suddenly turned bright blue. It lit up the entire sky like lightning, but it was more than just a quick flash. Even now, I can still see that image of the entire desert glowing blue. I don't know how long it stayed there. I don't know how long I stayed watching it. It was like time just stopped. Then there was a loud cracking noise. It was sharp like a branch breaking, but as loud as thunder. The lights immediately went out. I woke up late the next morning. My alarm had been snoozed several times, but I had no memory of doing it. I didn't remember getting into bed that night either. What I did remember was the events of that night. My memories of the bizarre lights are extremely vivid. Even now, it feels like just yesterday. I never told anyone. Like I said before, my career is my life, and I hold an important position in my field. I can't risk anyone thinking I'm crazy. I just had to get this story off my chest. That night still haunts me. I'm not even sure if I want to know the truth about what I saw. But hopefully now, I'll be able to have peace. So, I've got a story for you. Let me tell you about the night that'll forever be etched in my mind. It was a dark, chilly night in the small town where I grew up in Michigan. The kind of night that just feels strange. It all happened a couple of years ago, but it's still as clear as day to me. It was the summer of 2019, and the whole town was buzzing about some sightings of a creature that no one could identify. People talked, but I never really believed in all that mumbo-jumbo I was hearing about, it being some strange hybrid thing. That is, until the night of July 15th, when my buddies dared me to spend the night at the old Marshall farm. They picked the farm because it was said to be a hotspot for the creature. That's when things took a turn I'll never forget. The Marshall farm was an abandoned farmhouse located right at the edge of the woods, where the trees loomed tall and cast long, strange shadows. The place was old and rickety, and you could hear the creaking of the weathered wood. The air was thick there with the scent of damp earth, and the wind whispered in a way that made the place very creepy. So, I was settling down at the farm, flashlight in hand and magazine ready to distract me. It was kind of exciting at first, being out there all alone, testing my courage and all. But then, things started to change. The wind was rustling the leaves in a weird way, not like normal. It was making a sort of melody. I then started to almost hallucinate that it was trying to tell me something. Then, that low growl started. Yeah, it started far away, almost like a whisper, but it was persistent, growing louder and more unsettling with each passing minute. As I ventured outside to investigate, I noticed something else. There were tracks, big ones, leading right up to the edge of the woods. Not human tracks, not animal tracks I recognized either. The soil was upturned like something heavy and awkward had stomped through and messed up the grass. It made my skin crawl, And the smell, I can't forget that smell. It was this musky, damp scent that didn't belong to those woods. It wasn't the pleasant, earthy smell you get after a rain. No, this was different, like something wild and untamed. Then, there was the temperature drop. It got cold, real cold, like a chill settling over the whole place. Even though it was summer, I was suddenly shivering like it was the dead of winter. I started to feel watched, too. You know that feeling you get when you think someone's looking at you, but you can't quite see them? That's what it was like. I kept looking over my shoulder, eyes darting around, expecting to see something. But there was nothing. Not yet, anyway. And those sounds kept getting closer, like something was on the move. The growl, the rustling, the odd creaking that seemed to come from all directions. I even thought I heard a distant splash, like something wading through a swamp, which I couldn't figure out at all. All these things, they were like clues, like pieces of a puzzle that I didn't really want to solve. But they were there, and they were real, and they were leading me towards something I never thought I'd face. So yeah, there were signs, clear as day if you paid attention. It's just, at the time, I didn't really know what they meant. It was all a game, a dare, until it wasn't. Until it became something much, much more. Eventually it was midnight and I was back inside. The moon was out, but the clouds kept playing games, sometimes hiding it. Sometimes letting it shine down like a spotlight on a stage. And me? I was the unwilling audience. So I'd been hearing those noises for hours, and they were getting closer. I was now starting to sweat, heart pounding in my ears, even though the night was now cool. I decided to peek out the window, thinking maybe I'd catch a glimpse of a deer or something ordinary. Boy, was I wrong. The first thing I saw were those eyes. They were yellow, piercing, and evil. Not animal eyes, not human eyes, something in between. And they were staring right at me, like they could see through the walls. The creature was standing there at the edge of the clearing, where the trees gave way to the moonlit grass. It was tall, impossibly tall, like 8 feet or something. It was standing upright, but its body was moving all awkward, like as if it didn't really know how to walk on two legs, or maybe it just wasn't used to it. And I'll never forget that face. It was like an alligator or maybe a crocodile with scales and ridges, but somehow more terrifying. It was like it was sizing me up, deciding on how to deal with me. I ducked away from the window, heart hammering, afraid to breathe. The creature lingered for what felt like an eternity, shuffling around, sniffing the air like it was tracking something. I could hear it too, the heavy footfalls as it moved, the sound of its ragged breathing, the low growls that seemed to vibrate through the walls. I wanted to run, to scream, to do anything, but I was paralyzed. I just watched through a crack in the curtains as it explored the area. It moved towards the old barn, inspecting it, then the water well, like it was searching for something, or someone. It was intelligent, I could tell. It wasn't just some wild animal. It was thinking, planning, deciding. Finally, it turned and lumbered back into the woods, disappearing from sight. But the feeling, the dread, the terror, it didn't leave along with it. It hung in the air like a thick fog, reminding me that something was out there, something that didn't belong. I didn't sleep that night, and still I didn't leave the house until the sun was high in the sky. I just couldn't bring myself to go out. After that night, I told my friends, my family, even the local newspaper. Some believed me, but many just laughed it off. The sightings continued for a while, but a few days after my encounter, they stopped as suddenly as they began. The creature was never captured, never fully explained, and never seen again. The old Marshall farm stands still, but no one dares to go near it after dark. I've moved on, but the memories linger. Every time I close my eyes, I see those yellow, piercing eyes looking back at me. Some nights, when the wind is just right, I swear I can still hear that low growl, a reminder of the summer when the legend became real for me. So there you have it, the true story of the night I encountered something I still can't fully explain. Believe it or not, I don't care. It's up to you. But be careful out there, because you never know what might be lurking in the shadows. So, This is a story that I've kept to myself for the most part. Really, only a few close family members have ever heard it. My father told it to me, and the way he told it, his hands would shake, and his eyes would seem to see through time and space. This ain't your typical creature encounter story, I warn you. It was back in 68, deep in the jungles of Vietnam. My old man was a soldier, a bright-eyed and bushy-tailed private shipped off from our small Kentucky ranch to that humid hell, half a world away. He was with the 101st Airborne Division, stationed at this forward outpost that was more of a mud pit with tents than an actual base. Now, Dad was a dutiful man, never one to shirk responsibility, and he took to military life as best he could. What he didn't much care for was being so far away from home. I think he missed the green fields and the clear creeks of Kentucky. Sure, Vietnam was different, you know. One teeming with danger, real and present. Anyway, before the whole shit show, the day had been relatively calm. The guys were doing what they usually did, smoking, cleaning their weapons, or playing cards. Dad and his buddies, Hank and John, were having a break, huddled around a wooden crate they used as a makeshift table. All seasoned soldiers, they were slapping down cards and swapping stories from home. Hank was from Wisconsin, a dairy farmer's kid. John was from New York, son of a dock worker, city boy through and through. They were all different, but they became brothers in that wet jungle. They laughed, they fought, they bled together. That was the basic rhythm of their existence before. Before the incident, just regular GIs trying to keep sane in the chaos of war. Speaking of war, the combat ops were brutal too. They'd patrol during the day, maneuver through the foliage, crossing narrow streams and hike up steep inclines, all while watching out for the enemy. But their most dreaded part was the night ops. No one liked the jungle at night, Dad always emphasized. It was too quiet, too alive, too unforgiving. And then came the night that changed everything. It was one of those nights when the air felt heavy, and there was an almost eerie stillness in the atmosphere. There were a couple of platoons tasked with venturing out for a standard recon. Dad and his close-knit group were among them. Their objective was to move in deeper into the woods, monitor the enemy movement, and return to the outpost by sunrise, with night vision lenses over their eyes, M16S gripped tight. They headed out. Each step they took deeper into the jungle, bathing them in a deeper layer of obsidian black and an oppressive silence. It was as if the jungle was holding its breath, waiting for some unseen shoe to drop. Even the insects had quieted down, creating an unnatural vacuum of sound. They moved cautiously, the darkness almost a physical barrier, the oppressive humidity sticking their clothes to their bodies. Despite the best efforts, a sense of unease had started to creep in. It was like they were being watched. But by what, they couldn't tell. There was just this prickle on the back of their necks, a cold sensation worming its way down their spines. And no one could shake off the impending sense of doom. As they moved further into the belly of the jungle, the air seemed to get denser, and the familiar natural sounds of nighttime were missing. It was like everything else living had just decided to turn tail and hide. The only sound they heard was their labored breaths, the squelching of their boots sinking into the mud, and the occasional unexplained rustle of leaves. And then, without warning, it happened. Something moved in the darkness. A sudden flash of movement registered in the corner of their eyes, followed by an ear-piercing, bone-rattling roar echoing around them. The menacing roar shook them to their bones, and their breath hitched in their throats. Fear is a potent thing, and right then, it injected its icy venom straight into their hearts. Without a word, they turned towards the source of the sound. My dad's hand tightened around the butt of his M16. His heart pounded against his ribcage, but he swallowed back the lump of dread clutching at his throat. Now my dad, he'd seen a lot in the Nam. He'd looked into the eyes of a man he'd just shot dead. He'd held his buddy as he bled out, chanting half-forgotten prayers. He'd seen things that had hardened him to the harsh realities of life and death. But nothing, absolutely nothing, could have prepared him for what he saw next. Out of the blackness, something emerged. It towered above them, standing at least 8 feet tall, with a bulk that screamed of raw primal power. Its reptilian skin, smooth and scaly, glinted in the ambient low light, shadowy and terrifyingly real. It was nothing like they had ever seen. A feature that made it stand out was its eyes piercing yellow, glowing menacingly in the dark like sinister beacons. Its massive clawed hands flexed menacingly, scraping the trunks of the trees, the sound grating and chilling. It moved with a strange agility that belied its massive size, circling them as if sizing them up. My dad said its gaze felt calculating, like a predator contemplating its prey. The men were frozen as the creature observed the. Its predatory gaze sent a wave of visceral fear through them. The world plunged into a deadly game of predator and prey. All my dad and the others could do was hope and pray. And then it struck, fast, savage. Four men went down before they could even aim their rifles at it. It was like trying to fight shadows. Their bullets just whistled through the darkness, completely missing the creature. The jungle erupted into a cacophony of gunfire and guttural roars as they fell back, leaving their fallen soldiers behind. They ran for what seemed like hours, stumbling through the underbrush until they reached their outpost. The men who went out jovial and confident came back haunted and broken. They had entered the jungle as soldiers, but they returned as survivors. They didn't talk about it, not then. What could they say? They'd encountered something that defied all logic, all understanding. The incident was written off as an ambush, and they were commended for getting as many men back alive. But they all bore the scar of that night. Dad told me he spent many nights afterward, staring into the darkness, the echoes of his past haunting him. He wondered about what they had encountered that night, wondered about the men they'd left behind. With tangible pain in his eyes, he told me that what they saw that night was pure evil. It was cunning, ruthless, and utterly remorseful. It was the embodiment of the chaotic and cutthroat symphony of the jungle at night. He didn't talk about this for a long time. He hated remembering the death, the fear. It took him a while to even admit to himself what they'd seen that night. He never found out what it was, tried to forget. But you can't really forget something like that, can you? It stays with you, a shadow cast over your life, always just out of sight, always remembered. And that's my old man's story, a wild tale of a soldier's encounter with the unknown and the painful scars it left. A few months ago, we got a new security system for our house that included two mounted cameras. One was on the doorbell, and another was a motion sensor camera that looked out over the backyard. We didn't live in a bad area or anything, but people stealing packages off of porches wasn't unheard of. And we ordered a lot of stuff from Amazon. We also had two dogs. And when the camera detected motion, we got a notification. Soon our dogs figured out they could activate the backyard sensor to let us know that they wanted back inside. We had a huge yard in a rural area, so we let them out to run around the yard whenever they wanted. This new system worked out well, at least until something started tripping our camera at all hours of the night. The little dinging notification would wake me or my husband up a few times a week, and it drove us crazy. At first, we just turned our phones off at night, once the dogs were inside. But we were definitely still curious about what was out there. We tried watching the video, but the quality wasn't great in the dark, and we never saw anything clearly. Sometimes we thought we saw a blur at the edge of the yard, but it could have been a shadow or anything really. So, we gave up and started to ignore the notifications. A month later, one of our dogs came home injured. He had some bloody scratches and bite mark punctures. He was whimpering like crazy, and we freaked out. We rushed him to the vet to get him all patched up. Luckily, he was going to be okay, but the vet gave him a bunch of shots, just in case. When we asked what could have done it, the vet was stumped. He said the bite marks were vaguely canine, but too big to be a domestic dog. They didn't quite match anything he was familiar with. For a while after that, we were really careful about keeping the dogs close to the house. We always watched them when they were in the yard, and we didn't let them stay out long. We also noticed that our dog that had been attacked had no interest in getting too far from the house. We talked about different ideas, like fencing in a smaller area, but the dogs were energetic and loved being able to run. We decided to wait and see if anything else happened. It had been months without an incident, so we started cautiously letting them stay out longer and not watching them every second. We were hoping it had been a freak occurrence, and for a while, it seemed fine. But then one evening, a little before dusk, we heard them barking like crazy. We nervously ran outside and called to them. At first, they didn't come to us and they stayed at the edge of our property, barking and growling at something we couldn't see. We keep calling them and it took a while, but eventually they did come. That night, I left my phone volume up. I don't know why, but I just wanted to know if something was out there after all, especially if it was whatever had previously attacked our dog. I couldn't sleep and kept alternating watching out the window and keeping an eye on the security system app. By 1 a.m., nothing had come past, so I relaxed and fell asleep. Luckily, when the ding sounded on my phone, I was only half asleep. I shot up and grabbed my phone. I looked at the video and saw that dark blur again. Something was out there. I was sure of it now. I woke my husband, and he grabbed a baseball bat because that was all we had. And we both slowly went downstairs without turning on any lights. We looked out the back door window and watched for the black blur. We didn't turn on the light because we didn't want to scare anything away or alert it to us being there before we got a good look. It took about 10 minutes before we saw it move, but there it was, big and dark, walking way down at the far edge of the property. And when I say walking, I mean walking upright, like a person, not on all fours. It was so weird. We had been expecting an animal, but wondered if it was a person after all. Maybe someone lurking around, looking for stuff to steal. I'd been sure that the thing that had attacked our dog was the same thing in the backyard, but now I was confused. Did we have a dangerous wild animal on the loose and a creepy guy? What were the odds of having both? We kept watching, hoping to get a better look so we could tell the police something useful if we needed to. Eventually, it came closer to the house, just close enough for us to see it in the moonlight. We saw fur, fur everywhere. The person, or thing, was tall, really tall, but covered in fur. It didn't make any sense. It was coming closer to the house now. If it came any closer, I planned to turn on the back floodlight and see it. It took a few minutes, but it did come close enough. I reached over and flipped the light switch, flooding the backyard with light. The thing screeched and turned and ran, but not before we saw it clearly. We saw the tall, dark, furry body, and also the face, the horrible face. It was dog-like, with a canine-looking snout and long, sharp teeth. The most terrifying aspect was the eyes, reddish-orange and glowing as they glared straight at us before running off. The thing had looked like a demonic dog, but also a person. We called the police and animal control, but once we explained how we had seen this strange creature walking around with glowing eyes, they seemed to discount our story. We even sort of thought we were crazy too. How could this thing really exist? We got a half-hearted promise from the police that they would search the woods and set some traps, but we could tell that it probably would never happen, and they never did come back to update us. Luckily, that thing hasn't come back either, at least not yet. I was a biology major, hoping to get into medical school. I'd applied to several programs and was waiting to hear back. Everyone told me that you always get rejected your first time, so I decided to get a job in my field to better my chances when I applied again. I did a couple of internships during my undergraduate studies and found I really enjoyed lab work. I got a job at a biology lab just outside of Phoenix doing grunt work. In fact, it was mostly janitorial despite being advertised otherwise. It took about 8 months, but I worked my way up from scrubbing floors to landing a respectable position in my field. By the end of it, I was studying the Zika virus, more specifically, its effects in pregnant lab mice. I'll spare you the details for all the squeamish people out there. I would like to say that all our lab mice were treated as humanely as possible. The affected offspring were euthanized before they were even born. They didn't suffer, and while this might not have been ideal, it was the best way to study the virus, But I digress. This isn't the reason I wrote in about my story. There was something else in the lab. Something that most of us working there had no idea about. I didn't even know the thing existed until the day it almost escaped. I had stayed late one night doing a mouse dissection. I know that sounds bad, but there really isn't any other way to study them. The mouse was dead. It had been humanely euthanized. I wasn't torturing it or anything. And I'd also like to say that we were allowed to stay late at the lab if needed. I wasn't there secretly. The lights were on in my area. It was totally obvious I was there. It was nearly 1 a.m., and I was finally beginning to pack up my things and shut everything down at my workstation when I heard the alarm go off. At first, I thought it was the fire alarm, but I quickly realized it was a contamination breach. The doors shut and locked automatically, and there wasn't anything I could do until the contamination was controlled. I sat back down at my chair and opened my phone. I tried texting my boss to see if she knew anything about the situation, or how long I was expected to be stuck in the biology lab, but I didn't receive any response. Luckily, there was a sink here with filtered water and a small fridge. While not ideal, I would be fine if I was stuck for a while. It was a good 45 minutes before I heard people out in the hallway. I banged on the door to let them know I was in there. Luckily, I got one of them to stop and talk to me. They wouldn't tell me what was going on, but said I wasn't in any danger, but I just had to sit tight while they dealt with the problem. My biggest fear was a virus or a chemical leak somewhere. I didn't want to get infected with whatever superbug they might be cooking up in there, or even worse, wind up with cancer in 15 years. The more I thought about it, the more my mind wandered, and I'll be honest, I was scared. I ended up putting on a Tyvek suit and a gas mask just in case. It was all that I had in the lab, but at least it was some barrier between me and whatever might be in the air. I sat there in my PPE for another hour, maybe two before anything substantial happened. Out of nowhere, I heard shots, like from a machine gun. If you've never heard gunfire from inside a building before, let me tell you, it is totally deafening. I'm surprised the windows didn't crack. It was that loud. I could hear people running in the halls, at least. That's what it sounded like. I couldn't tell for certain because of the echoes of gunfire. It was like everything was muted after that. I took my mask off. Whatever the contamination was, it certainly wasn't any virus or chemical. I checked the door again, still locked. Then everything went quiet for another 20, maybe 30 minutes. I'm not entirely sure. I settled back down into my chair, hoping that maybe I'd get out of there sometime before morning. Then I heard something walking past the door. I hoped it was someone finally coming to let me out, so I went over to the door. I should mention that there are no windows in the lab I was locked in. The only window was a long, skinny, rectangular window on the door, so you could see into the hallway. I approached the window, expecting to see someone in PPE gear, or maybe a police officer, or security guard, but that isn't what was out there. I saw two amber eyes staring in at me. The height of the eyes was about right for a large man, but that isn't what I was looking at. Its face was covered in short gray hair, and it had this remarkable canine appearance. I mean, it literally looked like a wolf's face, but on a human-like body. The hair started to get longer at the sides of its face and neck, but I couldn't see much else past the door. I was trying to take in all the details, but I was also scared out of my mind. What I can tell you is that it had the face of a wolf and stood as tall as a human. It locked eyes with me, and I felt this chill run down my spine. Those eyes, they were intense, almost glowing with this otherworldly energy. It was like they were peering right into my soul. I was frozen, unable to look away. Then I heard it, the unmistakable sound of the door handle. It was trying to open the door. My heart leaped into my throat, and I stumbled back, fumbling for my phone to call for help. But I was paralyzed by fear, my fingers barely able to dial the numbers. The sound of the door handle continued, more persistent now, and I knew I had to do something. I grabbed a chair from the kitchen and wedged it under the door handle, praying that it would hold. The creature outside was getting more agitated, its growls louder and more ferocious. I panicked. I pulled the fire alarm, which managed to scare off the creature temporarily, but it also set the sprinkler system off. So now I was locked in a lab, with water spraying from the ceiling, and some sort of wolf creature wandering freely through the halls. I heard more gunfire over the sound of the fire alarm, and water spraying everywhere, and then silence. It was another hour before we were let out of the building, and sent home without any answers. My boss finally called me back and gave the excuse that it was a training drill gone awry. I knew she was lying, and I think she knew I knew she was lying, but we both also knew that she wasn't going to give me the real answer. Whatever happened that night, the only things I can say for certain is that they were keeping something in the lab that shouldn't have been. It got out, and likely was killed by whoever showed up to deal with it.